Yesterday, the House of Representatives overwhelmingly passed a resolution expressing support for Israel and condemning Yasser Arafat and other Palestinian leaders for encouraging the violence ending in the senseless loss of life. Hanan Ashrawi told me she considers this a cynical manipulation of the pain of the Palestinian people for the sake of votes and campaign funds. Ashrawi was the official spokesperson of the Palestinian delegation to the Middle East peace process from 1991 to 93. She now serves on the Palestine National Council and is the founder and secretary general of the Palestinian Initiative for the Promotion of Global Dialogue and Democracy. She's currently visiting the United States. This morning, I asked for her interpretation of why the peace process has fallen apart and why Palestinians are so disillusioned by the way it had been going.
Well, in the first place, I think the Israelis did not make the transition, the sort of qualitative shift in their mindset and mentalities that they have a peace partner and not a people under occupation. The mentality of occupation is one that distorts extremely the sort of view of the other and the mindset of the self, where implicit in the thinking, if not explicit, is a racist paradigm of having an almost God-given gift to enslave a whole nation, to dictate to the other side, to intimidate the other side, to continue with the policies of occupation, even under the guise of the peace process. So we ended up with more settlements being built, more land being confiscated, a state of siege continuing, the closures continued. They were never lifted. So people said, if this is the peace process, what do we need, you know, what is it like when there's war? That's one thing, and the sort of patronizing attitude that we can do whatever we want to you as Palestinians with impunity, without accountability or intervention. So people were saying, what's the use of signing agreements if they're not honored? If they're constantly modified, if the U.S. constantly bails Israel out and allows Israel to wreak havoc with the peace process.
What would it take, do you think, for Palestinians to go back to the negotiating table?
Well, right now we need a real period of taking stock, of assessment. It's not that we're not going back to the negotiating table. Israel has suspended the peace process. And Israel, in a sense, has destroyed its very substance, its very reality. To us, it's not... Unlike Israel and the U.S., we're not interested in the process per se. It's not an objective. We're interested in peace. That's our objective. The Americans seem to think that so long as there's a process, everything is fine, and Israel is free to do whatever it wants, provided people talk. But that's not the issue. People may talk for years, say the wrong things, achieve no results, reach no conclusions or agreements. So we need to be able to intervene to change conditions on the ground. It's not just talks.
What's your reaction to the feeling that Yasser Arafat should have done more, should be doing more,
I think they have
to calm things down and stop the violence?
It's a bit, I think they're a bit confused. It's the Israelis who are the occupying power. It's the Israelis who are in control of every aspect of our reality. It's the Israelis who are shooting to kill, who have Apache helicopters and Cobra fighter gunships, and it's the Israelis who use tanks against civilians and who use high-velocity bullets and live ammunition with our children as target practice. That's where you issue orders to an army. You tell the occupation army that should be disciplined and regimented to withdraw, not to continue the siege, not to shoot at children, not to use live ammunition. That's where the violence is coming from. It's not as if we're two separate states, so fighting each other with two armies. You have a besieged civilian population that is made subject to the most ruthless type of military occupation. And then you tell the victims that they have to sit back and die quietly and accept any kind of punitive measure and accept the siege and accept the theft, the outright theft of their land and their freedom, and not to protest, otherwise they'll be called violent.
I think a lot of people are wondering, a lot of Israelis and other people around the world are wondering, why are teenagers, why are children throwing rocks at armed military? It's an act of provocation when you throw rocks
at armed... Act of provocation?
Well, I mean, when you throw rocks at armed military, you're going to expect them to do something.
Yeah, but your military is on your land. The military that's on our land is an occupation army. We don't have weapons. We don't have an army. I was part of the earlier Intifada. I was part of the underground leadership. And we came out and we faced the army. We were entirely unarmed. We were shot at. We were beaten up. We were imprisoned. We were detained. And we face this because it's our land and we want to be free. Very simply, you never call a people who face the army of occupation as being provocative if they resist occupation. Two, the official conventional wisdom of the American media, that's why I'm very happy to be talking to you on NPR, has generally turned around and blamed the victim. And not only that, but gave themselves the right to adopt the Israeli version, narrative, discourse, wholesale, without even critical thinking or distance. And the worst part, the most horrific part, is that they gave themselves the right to rob us of our most common sense of decency and humanity by accusing us of not having any feelings for our children, as though we send our children out. In all places in the world, it's the younger generation that comes out, that speaks out, that resists, that says this is it. This is a popular revolt against oppression, against discrimination, against injustice. We are making ourselves heard. We are facing an armed, the strongest army in the region, the fourth strongest army in the world, entirely unarmed, but saying, we want to be free, and you let go of us and leave our land. This is basically the message. Freedom, dignity, independence, and the humanization of the Palestinians.
At the latest round of peace talks before things fell apart, Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak had, in the last of the Israeli offers, offered to give back more than 90% of the West Bank.
89% actually, the offer.
And that was seen in Israel as an offer that even went beyond what the Israeli public was willing to stand behind. And, mm-hmm. you know, Barak was seen as by Israeli standards, going pretty far in what he was offering. Mm-hmm. And that's where things fell apart.
Yeah.
Why did that have such a negative reaction among Palestinians when in Israel it was seen as, you know, going further than mm-hmm. than was expected?
Well, because, first of all, we went to the peace process to get back 22% of Palestine, that which was occupied in 1967. And because a Palestinian state is an essential requirement for peace, it has to be viable, it has to be democratic, it has to have its own territorial integrity. So here we get Barak going to Camp David, saying, well, we'll give you, and we'll give you in a very patronizing way, about 89% of your land, between 88 to 90%. We will maintain settlements. We will annex three blocks of your land, settlement blocks. We will keep Israeli settlers in Palestine. We will keep Jerusalem, but we will give you administrative responsibility. Typical sort of white man's burden, decolonization attitude. We know what's good for you. What we're giving you in a condescending manner. And they couldn't understand. And perhaps they're not ready for it. Maybe even Israeli public opinion is not ready. That we have given them a historical opportunity for peace and for legitimacy on the basis of a two-state solution. If they continue to blur the divide, if they continue to want to acquire land, we're not going to disappear as a people.
As a result of the peace process falling apart, Israeli Prime Minister Barak looks like he will either form a coalition government with Ariel Sharon, who is opposed to the peace process.
Oh, yeah.
Or the Barak government will likely dissolve when the parliament meets again,
yeah.
and be replaced by a conservative government that is likely to be opposed to the peace process. How do you feel about the likelihood that there will either be a coalition government with Sharon in it or a conservative government that is anti-peace process? Do you think that that will make things more difficult for your cause?
Of course, it'll make things more difficult for Israel. Barak has already put the peace process on hold. He's already shelling and killing Palestinians. His army is doing this to prove to the right wing that they can be just as hawkish and as bloodthirsty as the right. And this, to me, is extremely painful and ironic, that any government in Israel tries to gain its credentials by killing more Palestinians than the previous government to show that they have a strong hand, to show that they are powerful militaristic leaders.
So do you think that you're no worse off with a government that was, say, led by Netanyahu, who's opposed to the peace process, or a coalition government with Sharon, than you'd be with Barak's government?
Well, there's one difference. I think the Likud, the right wing, is subject to some kind of international scrutiny, while the Barak and his people have never been held accountable. They have the a priori blessings of the world, as though they can be guilty of no sin and no evil. The right wing is scrutinized more carefully than Barak and his government. They do not have a sort of forgiveness ahead of time for everything that they've done or might do. That's one. But two, of course, in a sense, it will bring out into the open the essential policies of what's been happening on the ground. Of course, it will make peace that much more difficult, but peace has not been easy. And we've paid a very heavy price for this process and for the interim phase. So it means we will be continuing to pay the price as Palestinians. The American Congress, once again, will adopt more resolutions against the Palestinians. Probably administrations will deal with the process and not with reality. And we will be locked into this dance macabre, and I called it, it's a fatal embrace. We must not continue this.
Hanan Ashrawi, thank you very much for talking with us.
You're most welcome. It's my pleasure.
Hanan Ashrawi is the former spokesperson of the Palestinian delegation to the Middle East peace talks. She's the founder of the Palestinian Initiative for the Promotion of Global Dialogue and Democracy. Coming up, Israel's former negotiator with the Palestinians, Uri Sevier. This is Fresh Air.